basically at the end of, I was 31. And so I was like, okay, well, that's it. You know, I'm done. We had a
you're 31 years old.
We had a 3 month consulting contract with those guys that bought it, and you know, we'd fly to Denver every couple of weeks. And 3 months later, they're like,
"See you later."
All righty.
Real business owner.
Whatever your situation is currently is not your forever situation.
That's really what real business owners is, man. Like, we don't care where you come from. Yeah. Where are you going?
Our goal and our job is to reduce the mistakes that you have to make or the money that you have to lose.
You want to be an entrepreneur, you want to be successful, don't give up.
You learn, adjust, and continue to move forward. Welcome back to the Real Business Owners Podcast with myself, Trevor Cowley. As always, Kel Goodman.
What's up?
Guys, today we have a local legend. He might not want to identify himself as a local legend, but you know, here's the deal. I mean, me and Kel have been in the game for, you know, a decade plus. This individual's been in the game for almost three decades. Guys, we have Shane Brinkerhoff on the show today, and we're just as excited as anybody else to have him on the show because, dude, whether you know it or not, we've looked up to you for many years and some of the things that you've done and accomplished. And so you've been an example to a lot of entrepreneurs in small towns with what you've been able to create. So whether you know that or not, you are having an impact just by you taking action at an extremely high level for, first off, small town St. George.
Yeah.
And secondly, as we alluded to, coming from a small town with like 300 people, to do what you've done is absolutely incredible. So we appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So we did hear early on in the early years that you were kind of around in the .com phase, right? Like that's kind of where you kind of cut your teeth in entrepreneurship is when you saw the internet start to become a thing?
Yeah, I kind of like to joke that we started when they still used to call it dot a period.
Period.
Yeah, it was still called a period. Yeah, it was like it wasn't period.com. Yeah, period. Yeah, com, you know?
Yeah. You didn't know what to say. Yeah, it was like, there's a period right there.
So, yeah, we started in 95.
Wow.
So, I mean,
Into website stuff in 95?
Into web stuff. So, I mean, the first graphical interface browser was 94, you know, Netscape's original one. So, you know, everything before that was text-based. So, 95 is when I got introduced to the internet through a guy that ironically had moved to Tropic, and he was a guy from California. And
So in Tropic is you were just 300 people, you found the internet and started geeking out on it.
Well, so he was moving there from California and we were running his farm and my dad was. And so I met this guy and just become friends. Like
it's a good guy to become friends with.
They were like moving out there and he'd be like, "Hey, you know, I've got a shipment of stuff coming out to Tropic from LA." And he was the founder of Body Glove, by the way.
So
$300 million.
And why the hell did he move to Tropic to live? Or just
same reason we want to move out in the hills.
Yeah,
bro.
I guess I just bought a place in Virgin. I'm like, you're telling me a rich guy bought something in the middle of nowhere?
Hell yeah.
And I just bought a property in the middle of nowhere.
He had a place and he lived in Temecula area and he wanted to get out of, raise his kids. He had two small kids and wanted to get out of California and he wanted to move somewhere in southern Utah and they'd went up towards Bryan Head and he couldn't find anything he liked. And there was another guy from California had bought a 565 acre ranch and built a big cabin on it out in Tropic. It was for sale and he came around and liked it and they ended up buying it. But it took him like a year to move out there. And so
gotcha. The
guys from California that had it, my dad was running, they had a big ranch there. My dad and my uncle were running that ranch for him. They were just
just working for him.
And they got to use it. And so he would call out and be like, "Yeah, I got a shipment of stuff coming out. Can you come and open the house?" And stuff like that. We'd let people, you know, these movers come in. And anyway, once they moved out there, I was just kind of treading water, hanging out. I just graduated from high school. And got to know him, and one day I walked into his house. And he's like, "What do you know about the internet?"
Nothing. You know, what is the internet?
He had this awesome, you know, 46100 computer with an 800 number Earthlink dial up, and he's like, "Hey, what do you know about Yellow Pages?" I don't know. What's I get that? A book yeah, on my yeah, doorstep, yeah, yeah. You know, once in a while, and he says, "I've got this directory," and he had this CD in his hand. He's got 15 million businesses in it. And he's like, "This is how I did business. If you need an attorney in New York, how do you get a hold of him?" you know, you don't have a phone book for New York. You don't have a way to do it. He said, so business owners buy this CD, and that's how they find people. He said, I've licensed this content from this company up in Nebraska. And he said, there's 15 million businesses on here. If I can get 100,000 of them to give me $1,000 a year, we're going to be doing good.
Yeah.
And so he had this idea to put a Yellow Page directory on the internet. So in August of 95, I started working with him and helping him gather content for this idea he had. And he was way early.
So did throughout this process, did you think he was crazy, or were you buying into the vision, or were you just like, hey, this guy's rich and he must know what he's doing, I'll just do whatever he asks.
He's like, I'll pay you $10 an hour to do this. I'm like, okay. Kay. So I would just sit in his office and use his computer and dial up and started to see what websites were. But I mean, it's hard for people to remember, especially if you're
young,
under the age of 35, that there was an internet before Google.
Yeah.
You know,
my introduction to the internet was my parents fighting over the AOL chat rooms. You know, they're like, who's this guy you're chatting with? Yeah. Like, and they're both chatting with people behind each other's
chat
backs.
Chat rooms were a big thing back in the day. That was like how you connected to people instead of on Facebook.
I am.
Exactly.
Your first direct messenger. Right?
Yeah.
That's funny. That's what there was. There was AOL and Earthlink, and there was a couple of things. Most people didn't even know, you know, because a browser, AOL had its own browser built inside of it. So, you know, going out and getting your own stuff. So, anyway, they put that Yellow Page directory up, and I believe it was the very first one. There might have been one other one around the same time, but he did a deal with Netscape, which was the only browser. And so we were the Yellow Page button on Netscape with this company called On Village.
That's cool.
So that's how I really got introduced to business. And then, you know, they had New York connections. They went out, raised a bunch of money, $5-6 million, opened an office. And you know, that's kind of how I learned about how business
in general
worked. You know, you put a sales team together and, you know, he had guys from Body Glove and other places that he'd worked with. And all of a sudden you had a national sales manager and regionals, and they were putting models together. How are we going to go out and sell the product? Can we do it directly? Do we need to partner with groups? And do we have a sales channel?
So you had indirect? Like a mentor in general that paid you. $10 an hour to mentor you.
You know,
now in this day and age, people pay for mentorship. They don't get paid to be mentored, you know. Would you give that guy a lot of credit for how your life ended up, or do you feel as though that if you never found the internet, I mean, just based upon communicating with you and all the things that you do, you seem like a guy that's, you know, you're successful in multiple different areas. It's not just the internet. Yeah, maybe the internet made you a lot of money early on, to the point where you were able to build a company, scale, and sell it for tens and tens of millions of dollars. And that was kind of your first big win in business. And then you were able to use some of that money to start other things and really learn stocks and this and that. He's a stock expert too. He runs circles around Warren Buffett.
Stock expert at playing. So I've had a couple of really good guys, that I've been fortunate to work with over the years. So with Jeff, his name was Jeff Walden, and that company was cool. It gave me a different view of how to do business because they went an indirect channel. It was the first time I saw private labels and, you know, almost like a SaaS model then for now, you know, like what would be SaaS now. So they had a platform.
Where technology was then, that was the SaaS back then.
So they basically had a platform that said, I'm going to go out to a Yellow Page publisher, and I'm going to use my database and put his book online. And then I'm going to give them a group of products, and they go out and sell it, and we'll fulfill it. And then we sell it to them at $30. They sell it at $100. We make our split. We do the fulfillment. And that was what our model was. And so we went to work, signed up Yellow Page publishers all over the nation. We were independent Yellow Page publishers. And that's when I found there was a big difference between small and big business. Risk adverse, you know, all that kind of stuff. We could go to a guy with one Yellow Page book and we could do a deal. But you wanted to go to US West, or if you remember US West, you know, or one of these big Baby Bell companies, they're like, nope. You know,
they didn't care for it.
You know, how are you funded? You know, how are we going to know this? We're not going to put any eggs in one basket. Like, it's, you just learned that budgets and how big business looks at it versus small, medium-sized businesses, which is two different umbrellas, public companies versus small private companies. You know, it was a completely different model. And So I had two other guys that worked with me at that time, who were my partners for years. And so we all three worked for that company, and they tried to go public in 97. And
how old were you during at in 97?
97, I
when you were starting to do all this stuff.
23.
Okay. I just wanted to add context to that because you know a lot of people aren't there when you say some of the stuff that you're saying that you were doing back then, they might assume that you were a 35 or 40 year old individual, yeah, or something like that, cuz you were doing some pretty cool stuff early on at a very young age. And I think that there's listeners, people that are 21, 22, 23 years old, they still view themselves as a child or as a kid. And so I just kind of wanted to highlight that real quick. It has nothing to do with your age. It just has to do with the amount of action that you're taking. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes we have some internal bias about how young we are and how much success we can have at a certain age. And you started cutting your teeth into entrepreneurship super early. And you, I mean, how many years? You probably put in your four, five, six years before you saw success.
I think that some people, I get told all the time, oh, you guys were lucky.
Yeah.
You were lucky. And I don't necessarily believe in luck, but I do believe in timing. And I believe in, you have to be able to, you might have a couple of times in your life that something comes along at a particular time, and you can either jump on it and go full in and 100% on board and try to run it all the way through. Or you can let it go by and hope that another one comes by. But I think a lot of people don't think that happens till after I finish college or once I get into the workforce or something like that. And it's not necessarily like that. You can be out by a fence post talking to a dude and have an opportunity. And it's like, what do you choose to do with it at that point in time? And I think preparation and opportunity plus timing makes for,
But if you're always prepared for the opportunity, when the time happens, then the time happens, right? Like, don't wait for something to happen, then try to prepare for the opportunity, right?
And you're, I think, behind the eight ball.
Correct. I think that that's what happens is people, like, for instance, I mean, I know I was guilty of at a young age where you see somebody that's ripped on the TV screen or whatever, and you're like, well, yeah, if that was my job, I'd be ripped too. You know, if like all I had to do was go to the gym every day for this, but let me ask you this. Were they 250 pounds of flubber and got the part and then got chiseled? Or were they already chiseled and somebody said, oh, they would be great for that part? You know what I mean? And so they were preparing for that opportunity without even knowing that opportunity would even happen, right? And really, I think that that's part of it as well. Are you performing at your best today and really trying to push yourself so that you could see opportunity when it does present itself? Right.
Well, and I'll tell you, the other thing is the sacrifice. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't realize, like, when you're 21 or 22, and I was spending 24 days a month on the road.
Yeah.
And, I wouldn't even come home on the weekends because I'd be on the East Coast, you know, and, it's.
So your days off sometimes would be hanging out on the East Coast a day or two.
Sitting in a hotel room because you're 21 years old and you're in Jackson, Mississippi or something. Yeah. It's not like you're going to be out, partying by yourself. I mean, you're out and you've got 2 days to try to prepare and you've got to drive from. You might end up in Memphis on Friday and you've got to be in Tulsa on Monday and, maybe you drive to Little Rock and work your way through or something. I mean, we were out training and doing stuff with the reps. And so, all my friends, I lived in this, I had a great house down here and, I had four or five buddies that were all going to college. And
Were they living in your house?
Yeah. Well, we all lived in it together, but I would come home and they'd been partying for two straight weeks and having a blast. And, oh man, you missed this and you missed that. And, it would suck, but
I was on the road paying for it, so you guys are welcome.
Yeah, it's some people don't realize, what you have to give up, especially when you're young. And I think that people kind of forget that. Like, hey, I'm 21. I deserve to be able to do, this weekend and be able to be hungover on Monday and Tuesday.
Have fun.
And
not, you're a kid.
Yeah.
I think that's hitting the nail on the head, though, as far as being prepared. Because you can't be prepared, like, Shane didn't know anything about the internet, and this thing came along. It's not like he was prepared in any sort of knowledge, but he was prepared to make a sacrifice for a better life and willing to make a sacrifice and that most people aren't willing to do. And so, because it's impossible to be prepared for opportunities you don't know are going to come by. Yeah, you know what I mean? You're just like, talking at a fence post with some random person about the internet and you barely know what the hell it is. Like, what the hell? I'm not prepared for anything, but started hell, let's go.
$10 an hour, and, you know, led to,
$10 an hour back then was a lot of money.
It was, actually.
Yeah, it was. I remember my first job at $3.35 an hour. Washing dishes.
I went into sales because my checks were literally $320, you know, landscaping, because I was getting paid like $6.25 or something like that. And I was like, well, fuck, if the sales don't work out, I can always be a grunt worker and pick up $300, dude. It's only up from here, you know? So, I wasn't falling from afar.
So did you become a partner with him then? Or how did that transition look from you going from working for this guy for $10 an hour to, like, partnering up with him or doing your own thing?
Yeah, so it was really kind of crazy. So we they tried to go public, and it didn't work out. Public is expensive. Yeah. And so they were supposed to go out in October of 97. They didn't make it out. There was a variety of reasons. But so they tried to, thought they'd try to limp along and go out in January. So me and Dustin and T, they asked all of us. So we were on salary. They asked us to take like a third salary reduction. We'll pay it back when we get the money and the funding and all that kind of stuff. And 1st of January, they realized that they weren't going to get out. So there was a competitor that we had down in Dallas called World Pages, which was become Verizon, Verizon Super Pages later. But so they bought them. They just bought them. I don't know what they paid for. I don't think they paid much. They were going to go under.
Bought them out.
Like bought them village. Yeah. So we just worked for those guys. So
gotcha.
So the guys that bought them, so simultaneous to, I was out doing Yellow Page deals. Dustin Tyler, they were trying to prove a model that if you had like a dedicated internet rep that went behind Yellow Page reps, that he could upsell them and sell them websites and SEO and all this kind of stuff, right? I mean, but, hey, we could tell you.
Yeah,
we could
do yeah, yeah.
We
yeah.
could send this.
It's 97, 96. Yeah, yeah. 96, I mean, it's early ass shit.
So they lived here. Actually, Tyler lived in Kanab and Dustin lived in Cedar. And they were going around and they'd sold, you know, like 50 or 60 websites to people. So we had, you know, like Ruby's or, you know, just different clients that we had a bunch of hotels and stuff in Kanab. And so this guy from Dallas calls me and he's like, you know, I don't think you want to move down to Dallas and do Yellow Page stuff anymore. And I'm like, no. He said, well, part of our obligation to the On Village partners and the buyout is to repay everybody the salaries, the reduction salary that you had for the last 4 months. He said, okay, great. He said, but I've got an offer for you. He said, if you and Dustin and Tyler would like to just keep all those websites that you sold, he said, we don't want to deal with these 50-some-odd websites we have in southern Utah. If you're going to just, we'll pay you whatever the remainder of the contracts are, and if you want to maintain and keep those, and us not give you back your money, you guys can have those and do your own thing.
Okay.
So they had a bunch of furniture and stuff in the office down in L.A., and they said, you guys can go down and get that kind of stuff and kind of get you set up. So Tyler took his dad's horse trailer, goes down to down La Cienega Boulevard, loads up this office equipment, comes back, and we set up a little office above the Flood Street Theaters right
there
here.
There you go. Sweet.
And that's how we got into business. So we had 50 websites, and it was just the three of us. And
how quickly from that moment, you know, small office, you three, going to pick up free furniture, stuff like that. Was it a 1 year run, 2 year run, 3 year, 5 year? How long of a run did you guys have together before you decided to sell your business?
About 10
years.
About
10 years?
Yeah. So, okay.
So just an overnight success type story. Just a,
How
many years did it feel like? How many years did that 10 years feel like?
It probably took 20 years off our lives, you know. But
the sacrifice made took 20 off, but it was only 10 in regular years.
Here's the thing. We were joking about this before we started, which was engineers, right? Like none of us were engineers.
Yeah.
None of us knew how to program. Tyler knew how to build websites. And so that was our scope. I mean, we had our blinders on. Hey, we got 50 websites. Me and Dust will go out and sell some more, and TJ will build them, and maybe we can get us 200 websites. So we can all make $5,000 a month or something. We're going to be excited about it.
Yeah.
So, that was our scope. Yeah,
it's funny, you know, to hear starting, the starting like, point. Yeah, yeah.
You're like, hey, that might be the best we could hope for.
Yeah.
But what happened was I had developed a lot of really good relationships with these Yellow Page publishers, and I'd been their rep for 2 years out on the road with them. And World Pages took them over, and their services weren't good. They were very inferior to On Village communication services that we had. And so I started getting calls from these guys saying, hey, you know, what are you doing now? And first it was like, hey, do you want to come to work with our sales team? And then it was, I was like, no, we're kind of doing our own thing. Like, well, can you develop some packages for us like you were doing? Well, so I was like, well, we can come up with some stuff to sell, but I don't have a few million dollars to go license this Yellow Page database that was providing your books for you. And they said, you know, we don't really like that anyway. We would much prefer to have our actual data out of our book be the database that goes online.
Mm.
Like, okay, well, we need an engineer then, because I'm like, how can you give us an export? How does this data come out? You know, they're like, oh, here's a PDF.
What's that?
Great, that's going to help me out a ton. I can really database that PDF. And, you know, this is what we said to the printer. So she can't make this shit up. So we went to Tyler's dad, and he gave us a $15,000. We went to every bank. I still won't go to a bank because, no, we couldn't get one bank to give us a penny.
Yeah. So now you're scorned. You do not want to give them your money now that you're rich. You're like, nope.
I bank with Merrill Lynch. I will not bank with Zions. I won't bank with it. No way. Those guys wouldn't give us a penny. They wanted our money later, but they wouldn't give us a cent when you needed it. Yeah.
And then when you sold for tens of millions, what can we possibly do for you?
Yeah.
Nothing. $10 million, $20 million for me. Yeah.
His dad gave us 15 grand. Yes. Alone for $15,000, and we went and hired an engineer. And, you know, you didn't have Amazon, you know, you had to go buy servers. You had to have your own thing.
You're hosting it all.
Yeah, you didn't have like Tonequin over here. You could go drop your boxes in. It was.
You burned through 15 grand quick, even back then.
Yeah, you burned through it really fast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we went up and there was a company in Provo called Phone Directories Company, and they had about 350 books. They were a pretty good sized publisher. And we worked with their tech guys to figure out a way to start getting data out of their system that we could database. And then we started creating products to fulfill. So we were doing the same thing that we were doing with On Village, except for we started creating these individualized book guides. So like St. George would have its own Yellow Page directory that they did here. And then we started, you know, creating those directories and making sites out of them and then doing SEO. And I mean, back then you could go into Yahoo and change a title tag or an H1 tag or something like that. And
because it was like open code.
Yeah. Well, then you would just submit it and the next day you'd see if it worked. So, I didn't rank any higher. Go in and change another one. Or I'm going to get this domain or you could AltaVista, web crawler.
So it was a wild west to the internet back then.
For sure. Without a doubt. And then we started being like, oh, well, we can just buy domains for it. Like, well, let's start picking up domains. So, you know, I started buying. Go buy BryceCanyon.com.
Right.
Let's go buy ZionCanyon.com. Let's buy StGeorgeUtah.com, which I still own to this day. You know, so we just...
How many website domains at your peak did you own when you just started going on a tear and buying a bunch of domain names?
Well, we had kind of two different phases of it. We probably had 300 or so pretty decent domains.
Yeah.
And then we had partnerships or owned at one time 27 of the 50state.com domains.
Yeah, I remember you guys had Vegas.com.
Yeah, we had NewOrleans.com, but I had Arizona.com.
So do those cities or state, they reach out to you and say, hey?
Not really. Most of them are using like the Visit domains. Okay. But you had people.
Visit NewOrleans.com or something like that.
So New Orleans was a little bit different, but because the city did want that, the Visitors Convention Bureau. But
so then they reach out to you directly and you do a deal?
Here's the thing that people don't remember about domains, if you were a pre-Google guy, is that people didn't used to search by typing it in a search box because the results were so skewed because anybody could do whatever they wanted to with tagging with SEO. So, you know, that's what made Google so great. It was like you actually get exactly what you're looking for. And so... people would go, like when we bought Arizona.com, it had 500 or 600,000 people a month that would just type in Arizona.com.
Yeah.
And so
there's all these eyeballs, all this attention. There was nothing there on the other side of it.
Yeah. So when we started developing these little guides for these Yellow Page directories, they started to get a lot of traffic. So we were like, okay, well, we'll start doing this with Yellow Page publishers all over the place. And that gave us a really good little base of business. It was, you know, gave us $30,000 or $40,000 a month worth of revenue that we could start
partnering. Now you could pay for your engineer without dad's
money.
Now
we could start to figure out something else. And so we decided that we would go to a group called InfoSpace, which was, they were public at the time. They're a big Yellow Page publisher up in Seattle. It was Naveen Jain, and they had that company. And we did a deal with them where they would give us their Yellow Page directory, a feed of their directory, and we build a guide for every city in the United States, every single zip code. And all of a sudden we had, you know, 2.5-3 million users a month that were coming to this group of sites. So we weren't making anything off of it. They were getting all the money. They were getting, they had all the traffic. We didn't have the money to buy the database. So, so we went to US West at that time and said, hey, you know, you need search traffic for your Yellow Pages. We have this much traffic in your 14 states. What if we pre-sold you traffic at 25 cents a search? And if we're going to give you a million searches at 25 cents a search, you stroke us a check for right now for 250 grand. Anything at the end of the year we don't fulfill, we'll pay you back at 28 cents a search. So we figured we needed 250 grand to go buy our own boxes, buy our own database, and put our own Yellow Page directory on the internet. And so that's what we did. And they somehow...
They
wrote the check.
That's smart. Could you say no to that?
So you got your own business loan when the banks wouldn't give you a business loan.
Essentially, we bet on ourselves. Yeah, I mean, yeah. For I don't know any other way to put it is that, you know, we went up and said, hey, we think we can keep this going, and
so that was the gasoline to the ember that you guys had going.
Yep. So as soon as we did that, we got our own data. Then Dan, we had a big Bell company. Now the risk averseness got a little bit different. So now all of a sudden Bell South's like, oh, you got to deal with Dex. Okay, we'll take the 9 states down here. And Southwestern Bell's like, oh, we'll take these 27 states. And Bell Atlantic's like, oh, we'll take these 9 states. And pretty soon we had the whole nation filled up with Yellow Page. We had revenue. We had a lot of revenue. And so
what was your peak in terms of your gross revenue in 1 year?
About 18.
18? Yeah. Margin's good on it.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
60-70%.
Really? Nice. Wow. Yeah. That's incredible.
How much we were growing at any given time, but you had a really good business, and so the Yellow Pages gave us a backbone, and all of a sudden so we went out, we had traffic, so all of a sudden we could go get deals. So we go to Expedia, be like, hey, you want your hotels on all of our city guide sites, and then we can feed the variables in, and you know, let's show up for these. And we went and started doing deals like that, apartments.com and whitepages.com. And we did all these deals. And you had to have pretty good traffic to get those deals. And so then what we started doing is going to these .coms. So we had our little segment of domains that we owned. But we started going to, we'd go to Alabama. How much money are you making? We'd type it in. There wouldn't be a website. A guy just owned it.
Yeah.
Be like, oh, 60,000 people a month type it in. So we're like, well, we'll put a website up for you. We'll private label it. It'll be our content. And we'll just split the revenue with you 50-50. So we just started going to every domain that we could find that had traffic and doing deals like that with them. And then as soon as we knew how much revenue they were making, and we'd be like, hey, if we can pay this off in 3 or 4 months, let's buy it from the guy.
Yeah.
So we'd be like, oh, you know, we're paying you $6,000 a month. We'll give you $60,000 for it. Yeah. Okay. And we bought that domain.
Yeah.
And that's how we started to really accumulate our big traffic domains, is we bought them through purchase, but we, you know, calculated based on
the
amount of revenue that we were making.
What years were the, like, this, so we talked about 96, 97. You were young, 23, 24, 25 years old. At this time, you're now what? 28, well, so 30 us, years old at when, this point, when you're really starting to do the $18 million years, things like that?
So in 98 was when Dustin, Tyler, and I started our own business.
Gotcha.
We scratched it together on a napkin at the McDonald's down at the end of Bluff Street.
So good things do come from McDonald's sometimes. McDonald's. Not necessarily the menu, but.
It was about, so we had a really good business going by 2001. 9/11 hurt it because the travel was, was big. But by 2004, last year we owned it, was 2005. So we sold it in 2005. And then simultaneously to that, in 2001, I was talking about mentorship. I met another group of guys, a guy named Bill Hammack and Don Jones down in New Orleans. And they were
some big dogs.
They were older, you know, they'd been in the game a long time, in the Yellow Page game. They used to say they had chronological credibility. You know, they had the gray and you know, they'd been in the game. They'd made a lot of money. Bill made a lot of money. I mean, probably in the hundreds of millions of dollars in Yellow Pages and had partnerships with Scripps and a bunch of big players. And they wanted to get back in on the website. And so we started a completely other company called YP Solutions. So that's kind of the drain of the one bit. This business continued to funnel money over to build this other business. So we had really good revenue streams, and we created products for Yellow Page publishers. Because we knew that one thing they all needed is traffic. They only go out and sell, you know, they could sell products, but if they didn't get traffic to them, you're never going to renew them. So we created in that company a PDF extraction algorithm. So I was talking about everybody wanted to give you their books and PDFs. So we created a way to actually take those PDFs from a book and rip all the data out of it and database it.
Gotcha.
Web-based, so we could do it for all these books. So we got great contracts. Like Sprint was a client of ours, and Dex, we were doing all
So was that part of the engineer that you guys brought on? Was he able to be the individual that kind of cracked that code in order to...
Yeah, we got it. We hired a really good software architect that, that developed that. And then we had a whole group of engineers here, and you know, nobody knew about it. We were just... kind of hanging out, over there, just
plugging away.
So that business became a really good business. So that would be, we would extract all the content and stuff for all these publishers on this side and then sell them the traffic for it over on the other side. And those were two standalone businesses. And we owned 50% of this one and we owned 100% of this one. And Don and Bill, and I went on the road with them for from 2001 to 2005 when we sold that one and worked under those guys. And I learned a lot from them.
They were, yeah.
They were really, really smart guys and had done a ton of deals. They sold a lot of companies. You know, that there's just a whole different business when you get into M&A and,
how that stuff works.
And, you know, public companies and...
Yeah, we got a lot to learn.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not our forte. So when you say there's a lot to learn, I'm like, don't know any of it. So there is a lot.
Well, it's great to have contracts with those companies, put it that way.
Yeah.
When I'd be sitting here across the street, and we might be doing a $6 million deal, and it doesn't mean 6 cents to you. That's a corporate deal. Yeah. It's over here. The money's already allocated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never have to worry about it not showing up. You signed a contract with a big public company.
It's as good as gold.
But you gotta
get in bed, figure out a way to get in bed with them, then figure out a way to fulfill it at a high level so that you can stay in bed with them as well. But you know, one thing that's super interesting is just, you have a question?
Oh, no, go ahead. I was going to ask something.
My thing is like a lot of people that are listening are working their ass off for one purpose, and that's to get fucking rich.
Yeah.
Like that are listening to freedom.
Right.
Shane, you've got to the process of getting rich and selling companies and getting millions and millions of dollars given to you. Why do you choose to continue to start new businesses? You've already started St. George News, and then you built that thing up and sold it, still have a little ownership in it, and then you've got this new product that you have. Like, why? You know, because everybody wants to go to the beach and sip on the that's the dream, right? You had the dream, so how good is the dream?
Well,
he's got to think about this one a little bit.
No, it's true. Like, I mean, realistically, when we sold our businesses, I was 30. So
millions at 30 years old.
We sold our first business in February of 2005, and that was YP Solutions, the one that did the PDF extraction and stuff like that. And then we sold the other one in October of that same year. So I turned 31 in between those two, but I was 31, and so I was like, okay, well, that's it. You know, I'm done.
You're 31 years old.
We had a 3 month consulting contract with those guys that bought it, and you know, we'd fly to Denver every couple of weeks. And 3 months later, they're like,
"See you later."
All righty,
we got it from here. Like, yeah.
Okay. You know, bought a big house, and you know, I just started playing golf 5 days a week. This is the way to do it.
And so that just gets old, or
go do it for a year. It's like you're 30, 31. You're like,
was your golf game not improving? Is that why you got frustrated?
I don't even play it anymore.
Said I'm way better at work than I am this.
Yeah, I mean, you guys get it. It's like, you know, it's like you, the thrill of the deal is, you know, it's half the thing. Like, you know, I mean, I can get as much. I still get stoked to go sell a $1,000 contract to somebody sometimes.
Yeah,
yeah.
Hell yeah.
You're just in the game. You just want to be in the game.
I call it a deal. I'm a deal junkie.
Yeah.
That's what I call it. It's like, I'm a deal junkie. And I had a hard time staying out. Like, but I did for 5 years, really. I didn't do much between 30 and 35. I didn't do a whole lot.
Let me ask you this. It's kind of a personal question a little bit, but those years that you didn't do a lot in terms of production, because people say that your self-worth is tied to like becoming better, right? Like chasing a better version of yourself, being in the fight, showing up to work, having a goal in mind and chasing that goal that gives you purpose, right? in those 5 years that you kind of bummed it, so to speak, or retired, however you want to put it, were those like, was that depressing?
Less fulfilling
or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Because I, again, is that what makes you want to jump back into the fight? Is just, it wasn't fulfilling doing nothing and part of the work. The process is the fulfillment, not necessarily the end result. Like, I'm trying to put those things together a little bit, you know?
Well, I would say for me personally, boredom is not my friend. I do a lot of destructive shit. Like, you know, I managed to screw up pretty much everything else in my life. I mean, really, if you want to get down to the root of it, you know, go and sell $60 million in companies in a year when you're 30 and you think you're pretty much a badass.
Yeah.
You know, so you're the, like,
the ego was inflated.
The ego got out of control and it needed to be knocked down. And it got knocked down pretty hard.
Throughout that five years. Your ego was beat up. Yeah. And then you're like, oh,
you
shit.
You're not always the smartest guy in the room, you know. You realize it could take some licks.
Maybe it was a timing, you know, type thing. You know?
Universe has a funny way to do that.
Yeah, it does. It teaches you some hard lessons.
No, I mean, we, you know, it's just interesting to hear that, right? Because I think a lot of people are looking for the end, you know, in their business.
I still
right?
think about it, but even though I know better from learning from other people, you know what I mean? It's like, you still want to know what it's like to be like, okay.
To have the option.
I can take a year off if I want, you know?
Yeah. No, and honestly, I mean, you know, after you work that hard to get a deal out, I mean, taking a year off was probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Taking 5 years off probably wasn't a good idea.
One year turned into five real quick.
And here's the other thing that I don't know if people realize that much is when you build a startup like that, the amount of time and effort and all the tolls it takes. I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that suffer when you spend that much time, you know, your family
and
people around you. When you've got one singular goal, it's like, I know, you know, when we got about 2001, 2002, we knew had a window. We're like, okay, we got a window right here before something else is going to pop on this thing and we've got to maximize it. So it was balls to the walls, 365.
Yeah.
You know, it was, so
I know exactly what you mean on that. And actually that kind of relates to the question I wanted to ask when you were talking about, man, we hit a hard time in 9/11, right? Around that time, 2001, because, you know, like I've had these conversations with Corey and Trevor. It's like, man, I've never been here, but here we are in this pandemic, right? And everyone's getting worried and they're starting to like pull back or, you know, liquidate things or scale down because they're scared, all these things. I'm like, you know what, man? Everything I've ever learned from all these business owners that came out on top was they were just head down working through that shit. Yeah. Like Y2K or, you know, Ebola and then 9/11. There's always something every 3, 4, 5 years, you know what I mean? And so what was your guys, even though you took a hit, were you guys like scared or were you just like, screw it, man, we're head down. We got this one singular goal. Like,
yeah, you know? So, I mean, it hurt a side of our business, but the other side, another side of our business still continued to do well. And then it came back, you know, I mean, it was just nobody flew, you know, everybody was, the travel business died for a while there. You know, it just was completely off the charts. But so it took, like, Expedia was a huge partner of ours and it went to basically to zero and so it was a big chunk. But yeah, you know, it was we were, you know, we weren't like freaking out to, oh, we can't, we probably didn't CapEx, you know, we probably didn't spend as much money on development and stuff like that for a year or two. But you know, we continued to the pieces that were going well and we have to lay people off or anything like that. And you know, just kind of power through it. And
what would you say the hardest part of just being an entrepreneur in general? Because I would say that's who you are. You're just you're an individual that loves opportunity, loves to be in the game, or however it is that you put it, right? Loves the deal, right? The part of the hunt. It's not necessarily the kill. It's the hunt for the kill, right? That kind of makes the kill a little bit more thrilling, so to speak. I mean, you've had so many different, you've been successful in different industries, right? Like, in general, the industry of entrepreneurship, what would you say is the most difficult part? Or was the most difficult part, or is, in your opinion, I guess I should say. it's honestly hard to pinpoint because it's just difficult in general, right?
Well, you know, my businesses have been a little bit different. So, you know, there's particular pieces of each one of them that you can think of, that I can think of anyway. I guess, like, so for say, like St. George News, it was creating something from scratch that you had to educate somebody about. And they didn't even know that people did stuff, you know, did the news without without print, you know, or, you know, just starting completely from scratch. And a really hard thing for me, especially in my second business, was running negative. I never ran negative before. Had to build a business to where it had to get to a level before you could be profitable.
Yeah.
In our first business, I always kind of had a theory, which is sell your way out of it. You know, if somebody wants to raise some money, it's like, you know, if your product's so great, go sell your way out of it. But
you did. You gave us your example of selling your way out of $250,000 deal.
Figure you got out
the
way,
money
you, know?
You needed. And
Sell your way out of it. But you know, sometimes you can't do that. You know, sometimes you have to get a user base that's big enough before you can sell advertising because you can't underdeliver for people. But I don't know. Niches are hard. You know, like trying to find. I always say that the riches are in the niches, but trying to identify those and sometimes educating people to the problem that they have. You know, or that's been a really tough one that we've had to deal with. But and I would say the other one is, like, after you do it once, it's really hard to gear up to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
that makes sense.
Because you understand what you're actually going into.
Yeah,
you know?
It's
like, do I want to climb this mountain again?
It's one thing when
again.
You're starving
and
you're like, hey, I'm all
I gotta
in.
Eat.
Yeah. You know, I'm all in and I'm building and, you know, now I've got a little money in the bank, but I can see the next, you know, I can see the next thing ahead of me. And it's another when you're like, I don't have to really go back to work if I don't want to.
Like getting out of bed when you know you don't. You for sure
especially
don't
if you have
a
bad day, you know, it's like, oh, you know, that deal didn't work out.
You
or
roll
this
over,
contract rolled out. And
you can roll over, open to be, you know, your Merrill Lynch account, I guess, and say, I'm good today. But you choose, obviously, to still continue to show up. So
I wonder though, like, do you in order to get motivated again, do you have to do something pretty uncomfortable? Like, shit, I don't want to part with whatever, $400,000 or $500,000 for this new project, but here you go. Now I got to really buy in because I don't want to lose that, you know?
Yeah, well, he's a Warren Buffett stock trader. He's a land developer. He owns news companies.
There's
domains.
A number. There's always an uncomfortable number.
Well, so sometimes you can just accidentally get into a business, you know?
Yeah.
Having a wrong talk next to a fence post, you know?
So I'll tell you a funny story. It's like, so I was bored. I called Corey, you know, I'm like, I've known Corey for 100 years, you know? And I was like, what the hell was the name of it? What's the Daily Deal company that was?
Dixie Direct?
No, like the big one that went public.
Not the Valpak stuff.
No, you know, when you would go and get a daily deal, like you'd sign up and they'd send you a coupon or you could buy that day.
Oh, yeah.
Can I remember the name of the company?
I think you would get...
Are they public now?
Yeah. They're public.
What is that?
There was two of them.
Tyler was just buying their stock this last year.
You can keep it in. People need to understand that smart people that are rich also blank out too. From time to time.
It's just been so long.
So
I know right when you say it, it's... God, what is it? Tyler was just buying their stock last year, and it was like, because it took a big hit in COVID.
What, the coupon? Or
yeah, it's like you get
it's not the coupon, though.
Groupon. Yeah, Groupon.
Yeah, so okay. Groupon. I was thinking right. I'm like, coupon. Yeah,
Groupon was doing really good. You know, they were rolling across the United States. There wasn't one here.
Yeah.
And so I called Corey, and I had that domain, and I was like, let's create a little Daily Deal site.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, why not? So... He built it for me. I still can't do a line of code to save my life. But, yeah. So he built this little Daily Deal site, and we're like, oh, maybe we'll create like a little directory for St. George, just something we can do locally, you know, just on the side. And so we start doing this little Daily Deal site. You know, we're making a couple of grand a month or something like that. It's no big deal, and it's just for fun. And finally, I was like, man, I wonder how we could get people to come back to the site more than once a day. So maybe we could do, you know, a second coupon or a second deal, or we could sell some advertising on the site because people just come, they just click on it, and they do it off the email. It's not really.
And you're doing that on purpose strategically just to try to get the visitor count.
Well, I mean, I was used to selling traffic. I knew, you know, from our previous businesses, that's what we really did is sold traffic. And
that data was important.
Yeah, and I was just like, well, so if everybody that comes to the site once could come four times, you know, I could sell advertising on it, I could have some other things. I'm like, so what could we do? And at that time, right around then, the Spectrum put a paywall up. So you had to pay, you know, you could read five stories and you had to subscribe to Spectrum. Okay. And so I was like, well, maybe we can do some news. I'm like, we could hire like one reporter and he could write two stories a day and that's everything that happens in Southern Utah. I mean, I can't
imagine. It's too small. Yeah.
I'm like, I can't imagine there's anything more than that.
One DUI and our grandma got helped across the street.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what we did. We took a little bit of our money. I paid a guy $800 a month. And he had another job and he had been a journalist.
Just do some articles.
Here. Yeah, and he started writing a couple stories a day. And we switched our thing over to WordPress. And so we started putting a couple stories a day up on the site. And that was it.
That's what turned into StGeorgeNews.com, huh? Well, be careful what ideas that you kick up and talk to a homie about, because that was what, a 5, 8, 10-year run again?
We put that site live in May of 2011.
And you sold it 2020?
No, in 18. Yeah.
So that was what, a 7, 8-year run on that business? Yeah.
But I still work in that business now, so... Yeah, but it's, you know, so if you think about what that was then, and that was it. And then we built that over, you know, now to where it's, you know, 600,000 users a month. And it's,
you know, what's interesting about that story is how many other people have a weird little quirky idea that they do nothing about, because initially your quirky idea only landed you a couple grand a month. That's not the big hit.
No.
You know what I mean? But it eventually turned into something. I wonder how many ideas that people have that are just so minor and so small that they really just don't pursue them because they don't think it'll turn into anything. But the fact that you took action on one little thing, picked up the phone and said, hey, maybe we should do this thing. And somebody else said, yeah, let's do it. Then you guys do it. Next thing you know, 8 years later, you're selling that company and still involved in that business. And so it shows you right there that it doesn't have to start as a massive, large, extreme goal. You originally talked about, hey, we just wanted to make $5,000 a month each.
Yeah, we're just like, okay, can we get a little bit more traffic that comes over the site. Maybe we can sell a few ads or something like that on it. It was just it was kind of funny way that business started.
And another thing, too, is there's always somebody out there that's kind of passionate about something that you can kind of, like that dude, the first guy writing articles. You're like, whatever, man. I just found some dude for $800 a month. And then now it's evolving into something. Like, there's always something. Like, you don't have to have a shit ton of money to go out and just find one person to kind of like take it to another thing, right? Someone out there you could be like, hey, who likes writing?
Yeah.
There's a lot of people passionate about that, you know?
That are writing for no money right now, right? What can you duct tape together right now is the question, with the budget that you have, because there's something you could put together. Go to Upwork.com and find somebody that's good at what you're not good at doing. Hire them to be great at where you're not great and then slowly start building, right?
Yeah, so that's actually kind of what we did. We had him writing and then we were like, okay, well, how do we expand this? And there was this lady... And she had a little website called Dixie Press. And she had all volunteer writers. They could just write. No, she wasn't paying anything. And I was like,
well, it's like an opinion.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was like they were writing. Yeah. Some people write news, but it was all for free.
Practice.
And she wasn't paying anybody anything. And they had a pretty nice little platform. So I just called her up and went and had lunch with her and stroked her check for $6,000 and bought that site
from
her.
That was
it? And that gave us the infrastructure. And then ended up getting Joyce, who became our editor-in-chief. And you know, all these little connections to this little world of little news people. I had no idea it was even going around here, and this little team of writers. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I'll pay you $25 an article or something like that. And they thought that was fantastic. And so then, and all of a sudden, like 6 months, you know, the Daily Deal site we had, you know, 50,000 users a month coming to read news content.
Yeah. From there, you start selling the advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. But so, you know, then you're like, okay, well, If you're going to be real news, you have to, you know, there's certain things that people expect from you. So then you have to start filling in gaps and doing beats and covering city council meetings and doing all these different kinds of things that cost money. So that's where you have, it's nice to be able to have some
revenue
money to be able to say, to be able to say, okay, I'm going to double down on this and put $250,000 into the business and go and hire the people it really needs to do. And I'm going to run red for 18 months before I'm going to be, you know, positive. But
so you played with it for a minute and then you saw what it had the ability to do. Yeah. And then you went deep into it, put your own money.
And we doubled down on it.
And then you doubled down. And then that's when it started.
Yep.
Yeah. You put the gasoline on the fire on that ember.
I heard Mark Cuban say, I can't remember the quote or whatever, but he was talking about something like after he sold his big business or whatever, it's billion dollar deal the first time. He's like, you know, you know, everything I did after that, because there wasn't this like pressure of sink or swim. Like you're like, you are at a comfortable place. Like, you know, you could retire forever, right? Like, everything you did after that was like more fun, less pressure, and it became easier. I mean, would you say that from your experience of building things after your couple sales that like, well, you know, like you're operating from a point of like, you know, I don't have to do this. I want to do this.
Yeah, so you're operating from abundance almost, because you have abundance to us. And when most entrepreneurs start there, it's kind of a scarcity thing. Like, they don't have a lot. So they're,
it's their only thing.
It's their only thing. Right. So
yeah, it's definitely two different worlds. And after you do some deals and you've been doing this, I mean, you guys know, like, you look back and you're like, oh my gosh, I should have done that different, you know.
Right.
Well, I really screwed that deal up. And, you know, I mean, like, and you know, everything hasn't been great. We've had a couple of businesses completely flop that we've had, you know. I mean, there's, you know, they sound all good, but, you know, there was a few in between there that were.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I lost $1.5 million on a NewOrleans.com deal that we did.
Really?
We tried to make a huge deal out of it, and we bought the domain, and we, you know, hired a full staff, and we took a lick on that. And, you know, I mean, we've had some that haven't worked out, but you learn a lot. So it's a whole, I feel it's a lot different when you get a little, I mean, I understand why, like, a public company or a company getting ready to go public that's had this great CEO that's 30 years old, why they, like, want the adult in the room to come in.
You read
the books, you read all you know, and if you read Uber, you read Airbnb, you read any of these stories, you know, it's always like when they're trying to force the adult into the room, it's like, hey, you need somebody that really has this background, that understands manufacturing or whatever type of business you're in, supply chain, and things like that. And you look back on your businesses, and I'm sure you guys would think the same way. If I knew now what, if I, you know, had the knowledge base I have now when I started it,
it could have been way bigger,
different. We would have moved to Silicon Valley in 97, you know, 98, you know, we would, you know, like Elon Musk had it. If you read his very first business, I used to be at YIPA conventions with him. He had Zip 2.
Yeah.
And they did a newspaper, Yellow Page platform only for newspapers. And they sold it for $290 million.
Yeah.
You know, they were in the right place, and they had, you know, good money behind them. And, you know, it was.
Now he's buying Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, now he's got more money than God.
Yeah.
And literally. And, but. Yeah, but I think when you look back, so now when you start a business, you kind of know, okay, well, I've got to do this, and I've got to make sure I have this right, and, you know, it worked when I just winged it before, but it's much better to have an actual business plan before I start this, or kind of know where I'm going, or know where my client base is, and before I go spend a whole bunch of money, I want to, you know, prove that there's a market for it, or whatever it might be.
But at the same time, you get to take all those lessons and then apply it to everything that you're doing now to expedite some of the stuff that you're doing. Some of the relationships that you probably fostered 15 or 20 years ago are still paying dividends to you now, people that you can hit up for this, that, or the other. Talk a little bit real quick before we end on what it is that you're up to now, because we've already gone through, you know, domain stuff. We've gone through building websites, Yellow Page stuff, the fact that you have, you know, the sense of Warren Buffett in terms of stock trading, your land development's better than Donald Trump. So what are you doing now outside of your stock trading, your land deals, business-wise, more so than investing?
Well, it's kind of funny. So out of businesses sometimes come businesses, right? And so a few years ago with St. George News, I got pretty kind of passionate about content. Like, you know, it costs so much money to develop, you know, the largest single cost. I mean, I probably spent $65,000-$70,000 a month in reporting.
Generating content.
You guys know, I mean, content's expensive.
Yeah.
And I hate when people steal it, you know? And so, you know, I figure I have a trade-off with my users for St. George News. Is I give you content for free and don't charge you a subscription. In turn, you view my advertising. And
as Facebook,
same as a lot of businesses.
Doesn't cost,
same as radio. You know, I mean, there's a lot of different things that work off of that.
Free, you're the product. You know, free, you're the product. Yeah,
yeah. So, you know, with online news, it's been a tough business. I mean, especially since you know, the pandemic and stuff. Like, it's been a tough business. And so, you know, I really got into kind of protecting content and people that. that use ad blockers or use different things to be able to view your content for free, and they don't realize how much it hurts your business.
Yeah.
And so we developed a product around that, first for ourselves and now one that we sell, which is, you know, that ad block detection, being able to detect if people are using it. And what's funny about it is most people don't know they have them. You know, after doing this for a few years, and we answer every phone call that of the people that complain, you know, wondering why we're not letting them read their story for free, or one of our other publishing partners.
Yeah.
And is that the most of 50% of them have no idea they have one on.
Yeah.
They don't realize that Firefox has one sold in. You have to go change the setting if you download a Firefox, or if you have malware bytes, or you have one of these security features that are on your that are on a computer that you don't realize is scraping ads out of it. So you can give a message to people that says, hey, you know, our content costs us a lot of money. You know, you're hurting our business by having these ad blockers on. You know, shut them off. Like 50% of them will just shut them off right off the bat. Because they don't even realize what they're doing. And then another 50% don't want to see ads.
Say, screw you.
So, yeah. So we do that, and we offer subscriptions to people, ad-free subscriptions and stuff like that if they don't want to.
So if they want to keep their ad blocker on, then they're going to have to pay for the content.
Yeah, so that's the way I figure. It's kind of like cable, right? You know, if you want to watch over the air, then you can watch it over the air. It doesn't cost you anything. You just get to see, you know, watch the ads. But if you want to see Netflix and watch it without commercials, you're going to have to pay $14.95
more. Mm-hmm.
And so we do the same thing. I'm not going to charge you if you want to view my advertisers, but if you don't want to view my advertisers, you can have subscribe to, okay, to these content sites. Yeah, and so we have a site called RevCatch, and we, you know, we do that for platforms all over the place.
So anyone listening now that creates content for their business, that's something, a tool that they could possibly use, right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you have content and it's sacred to you and you want to, you may get money off of it. I mean, that's what a lot of content is created for, is for advertising revenue. You know, and some people don't care, but there's a lot of people that really do care about protecting their brand and protecting the content they create and making sure that, you know, that they get the best out of.
Well, it's hard to build a business just in general, you know, So people don't understand. You know, I think a lot of people look at entrepreneurs or business owners that, like, they've already just made it, right? Like, who cares if my ad blocker's on? They're probably rich anyways, whoever's behind the curtain, so to speak. But as you alluded to earlier in the podcast, there's just a lot of time and sacrifice and effort that's put in to even get to that point. So, you know, anybody that doesn't own a business, just respect the fact that it is very difficult and there are a lot of sacrifices that need to be made in order to be successful. And all that individual is doing is just trying to protect what they've built and continue to employ a lot of people so that they can, you know, that's one thing for us. Like, we don't want to ever raise prices on our clients, but at the same time, we also want to be able to have continued opportunity for our employees so that they can continue to grow, right? Financially in our organization. And so that's just kind of part of the process. We have to catch everything that we possibly can in every area that we possibly can. And it has nothing to do with trying to hurt anybody. It's just trying to improve, do what the quality. Business was designed to do.
We're all in business to make money. Yeah. I mean, if nobody makes any money, you're not going to have a lot of business. So, you know, you can understand everybody's own perspective on it. But I think you're right. Most people just look at a site and they're just like, oh, well, these guys are making money. It doesn't really matter if I pay it or if I see this or if I do this.
Which might be true to Shane, but not all websites. Shane's got the dough. Shane's got
it was a huge amount of money for us.
Was it really?
Yeah, I mean,
you noticed when you brought that product to the market that a lot of your revenue increased greatly
because gave us about 2 million impressions a month to sell.
Wow.
That's a substantial amount of revenue. Mm. Yeah, we've got clients that, it's dramatic sometimes.
Do you come in and just do a monthly fee on something like that, or is it a percentage of revenue that it catches?
It's just a monthly fee. So we basically have a script that you can put on your site, and it'll just tell you how many people are blocking ads. It doesn't cost you anything. And then you can make a choice then if you want to detect those guys and give them a message, or if you want to offer a subscription model or something like that to then benefit
from. So do you give them a free, like, hey, check it out and I'll show you the data on how many people have their ad blockers on so that you show them the data to where they see physically what they're missing out on?
Yep. You can just come and sign up for an account. You put the script in the head of your website and
Would they go to do something like that?
Just at RevCatch.com.
RevCatch.com. If somebody wanted to connect with you in any, you're not, are you big on social media? Like, all that. And, you guys, he doesn't care if you follow him, and he doesn't probably want you to follow him because he has enough money already. So he's not, you know, just go to revcatch.com.
You'd be pretty bored on my social media. Yeah,
he's out there doing shit. He's not posting shit. So
LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn. You
can Shane Brinkerhoff on LinkedIn. Yeah. You'll see a list of all his successes underneath that smiling face, so you'll know that that's him. There's probably 10 Shane Brinkerhoffs when you look it up, though.
No,
follow that one.
I don't have that. Yeah, I don't have any of those fake account stuff.
No, issues. Nobody's trying to be me.
Either. You, okay. Yeah.
No, I am. I'm here trying to be you. Get rich.
Like, this is a pretty boring dude.
Yeah,
no, doesn't do a lot.
No, you've been like I said, kind of a talk of the town, whether you know it or not, in terms of some of the successes that you've had, and you've again laid a good foundation of what's possible for an individual that does live in a small town. You know what I mean? Coming from Tropic, 350 people or whatever it was when you grew up. And so could be small town kids listening to this podcast right now, looking at their current situation. What you see, like physically see with your eyes, that's all limitations, right? Like, he only saw Tropic, but there's something so much bigger and greater outside of whatever you physically can see. You actually just have to go more so in your mind. What do you see there? What do you want to create? And really start taking action, because when he has thoughts, you know, hey, let's do a St. George Dill thing, he put that thought into motion and took a little bit of action just by even making that one phone call that turned into another business for him. And so action's probably the most important aspect after speaking to you today, is all these little things that you did, you just took action and were dumb enough not to quit and give up halfway through the process. And you just continue to pound your face against the wall until something happened, huh?
Well, I think we all do that from time to time. But No, all of us being small town kids, you know, the one good thing that you can always find out about small town kids is they know how to work. Mm. They've all had to work. You know,
it's true.
There's not a lot of rich small town kids, right?
That just live in a mansion on the corner. There's not a lot of mansions either.
You don't have a lot of those kids, you know. We like to work when we're young.
Yeah,
you know?
The only thing we know is work, discipline. Yeah. Discipline and hard work. And I believe that those two things alone definitely have the ability to take an individual very, very far in life. And then hopefully you get a couple great opportunities with timing, with that discipline and with that work ethic that'll, you know, put you in a seat of Shane Brinkerhoff one day, you know, so.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So, no, bro, we appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You're amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Guys, make sure that, again, if you run any sort of ads or you're doing anything in that way with content, that you go to, you know, revcatch.com, check that out, see if it can bring value to you and your business, your organization, bring up your revenue. From what I've heard about it and the conversations we've had in the gym about it, it seems like it's pretty cool. Shane's on the road again, doing his old school thing, you know,
back on the road.
So
he's also, everything he's ever done has seemed to be super valuable. I remember when we first started Easier Accounting from the old accounting partnership that I followed. You had a meeting with us. You gave us some hacks. We ended up hiring you guys for marketing, working with Scott and some of those guys back then.
And
that actually was like a really cool starting point for us. And so, you know, and I don't know, you didn't really ask for anything, but you just gave us a bunch of hacks, and then by default we hired you. But everything you guys have ever done with us has been quality, man.
No doubt.
I'm sure people are going to check out RevCatch if they're the right people. It's going to be quality.
We're back at the old Stephen Wade office.
Over there. Exactly.
There were a couple Easier Accounting commercials.
Jeremy, we can't take him to meetings anymore.
No more meetings for Jeremy. Sorry, Jer. You're 86 from business meetings. Anywho, you talked about your guys' Halloween party at that meeting or something from back in the day. Yeah. Halloween party.
That was in the 5-year gap.
That was the five-year not working gap. That's a Halloween party. We'll just keep where it was. Okay.
It's been in the past.
Yeah, exactly. So we hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. We know we did. Guys, we'll see you next week. Take care. Kick ass.